mold, disease, rising seas, widespread famine and disease, Amazon, Borneo, Armageddon.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bryant. Now, Jane, what was that good find?
This is from the Torquay Girls' School.
The Torquay?
I think it's an Australian school.
And it's clearly set to We Didn't Start the Fire, and all of the lyrics are about...
Climate change and melting ice caps and burning and, yeah.
Really uplifting stuff for children to sing about.
It's kind of perky.
It's a great song.
It is a
great melody. Well, what you know, when Jane picks a fun song like that, it is an indicator of what the topic is next. And so our guests for the next half hour work for 350 Wisconsin Action, an organization that works to keep the climate crisis at the center of our political conversations. And since we are in an election year, and come November, we will have a chance to vote for people at many levels of government, we thought we should have a conversation about just that. So our guests are Dr. Chris Uttenberger, who is a volunteer with 350 Wisconsin, and Emily Park, who's a communications lead and an organizer. Welcome to the show, Chris and Emily.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So I guess let's start from the beginning. What is 350 Wisconsin Action?
So 350 Wisconsin Action is a newly formed organization. We are the sister organization of 350 Wisconsin, and we focus, like you said, on keeping climate change at the center of the political conversation. So making sure that climate and climate justice are front and center in the political debate, both in the election cycle and then in the legislature and in every aspect of government, from local government all the way up to the federal level.
And how do you do that? How do you put the pressure on, or how do you keep it in the center of the conversation?
Well, as you probably know, these days the climate crisis is competing with a lot of very, very important issues that are front and center in people's minds. And so making sure that the public understands how everyday events like inflation and price instability, how that's related to climate, and how their vote really has a meaningful impact on the way things go from here. So how is their daily life, either in the city of Madison, in the city of Milwaukee, in the farming communities of Wisconsin, how is their daily life affected by the climate crisis, and how can they vote in a way that will make our government take action?
And I guess to get
Emily's absolutely right in that one. Emily's absolutely right. There's going to be a lot on the ballot in November. There's reproductive rights. There's the inflation. There's a ton of looming threats to democracy just in general. But the climate change, the green movement, that's the evergreen movement of our time, more or less. And keeping that front and center, making sure it doesn't fall to the wayside, is important in this election and many elections to come.
So I guess because I think a lot of times when we see the effects of climate change right now, we're seeing flooding in certain areas that are on, you know, have coastal lines on the ocean. We see the fires that were in Australia in the beginning of 2020. Sometimes I feel like we feel like we're safe in Wisconsin because we're obviously we're not landlocked. We have Lake Michigan, but we're not on an ocean. We are a cooler climate, so we're not overheating like Arizona or Texas. So when you talk to constituents and you talk to voters, what are the climate issues that we're seeing that are affecting people's lives in our state?
Chris, do you want to go ahead and talk a little bit about how rural Wisconsinites are seeing this?
I think, yeah, the general vibe of 350 Wisconsin, and the reason why we're called 350, comes from this metric of CO2 pollutants in the atmosphere. So 350 parts per million is what the scientists consider the safe amount of CO2 that we can have in our atmosphere. Right now, we're hovering around 417, 418, 419, and that's just an unsafe and unstable way to keep CO2 in the atmosphere. We need to bring that down to 350. And the Wisconsin farmers, we're going to see that in terms of agriculture output. And that's obviously, like Emily said, a big part of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin farmers are going to look towards their crop output as a direct measure of how climate change is affecting them.
And sort of on a more global scale, we look at the news and see all the terrible things that are happening in Pakistan and, you know, around the world, and it, you know, it does feel very removed from Wisconsin. But at the end of the day, you know, the first industry that is already being impacted, as Chris said, is agriculture. And then so when agricultural industries around the world are suffering, that will have ripple effects through the entire supply chain, and that will affect the stability of our local economy, our national economy, our global economy, and of course, it's putting lives at risk, and it's, you know, people will be going into armed conflicts for natural resources. So we might not be feeling the floods that Pakistan is feeling now, but we are already experiencing the price instability, the fluctuating energy prices. We're already seeing that in our pocketbooks, and eventually we will be seeing it threatening our actual lives and livelihoods.
This is a question for either of you. The movement of refugees from around the world is largely driven, certainly by violence in some instances, but climate is a big pusher of that as well, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the unrest in Latin America is happening because farmers are unable to make a living anymore because of, you know, droughts or floods or just, you know, unstable growing conditions. And the economic instability this is causing is allowing organized crime to establish a deeper foothold. And so these people in the global south are suffering, like right now, from the climate crisis, which is primarily caused by wealthier countries of the global north. And so they're rightfully so seeking out a better life somewhere. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talk about, oh, we don't want immigrants coming to the U.S. from South America, but the reality is America's choices are forcing these conditions on the rest of the world. And, you know, we need to make it so that as we move forward into a clean energy economy, there's a way for all people to thrive and survive in whatever environment they want to.
Our guests this half hour are Dr. Chris Uttenberger and Emily Park, who work for 350 Wisconsin and 350 Action. And so as part of the mission is to keep the conversation around climate change front and center when we talk about elections and politics, who have you endorsed so far in this election cycle?
We have endorsed Governor Tony Evers. We are very, very excited about the work that he has already done on the governor's task force on climate change and just being an advocate for climate and for justice. So we are excited to have endorsed him. And we are also excited to endorse Mandela Barnes for Senate. Again, he was an integral part of the governor's task force on climate change, and we see him as being a very strong champion for climate causes and for justice causes moving forward.
Will you make endorsements for more down ballot candidates, or are you largely focused on the top of the ticket statewide races?
For now, we are focused on the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race, but we are going to be looking at some of the down ballot races and also some of the U.S. House races.
Because I often wonder, I saw a great video the other day as an individual who was like, I do all the things I'm supposed to do, but then I hear that the bigger problem is rich people in their private jets. They're like, I can't fix that. I can't do that. And so when you talk about why Wisconsin and in general climate change and climate champions need to be at every level of government, what on the state level of the state legislature or even at the local level could we be doing, or what should we be looking out for our local and state officials and what they want to do that could move the needle?
Yes.
No, yeah, definitely. When we talk to constituents, when we talk to Wisconsinites, they are worried about, you know, climate change in general, and they do have some level of respect for regulations and investments, in green energy, for example, and funding renewable energy resources and regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. So there is a desire from Wisconsinites to implement clean energy in the state. And in order to do that, it really does take everybody on the ballot, right? It takes local officials, it takes state-level officials, and it does take those senators and congressmen we send to D.C. And so we're not only focusing as 350 Wisconsin Action, we're not only focusing on those big cities, Madison, or Milwaukee, and some of the smaller cities, La Crosse, Eau Claire, Stevens Point, Green Bay, but we also are reaching out to those rural communities and seeing how those communities themselves can invest in these green energies and how they can elect local officials that are real progressive champions and climate champions that hope to make the world a better place through their climate initiatives. And those can take the form of solar energy products or wind energy products or projects, and investments in electrical vehicle infrastructure, for example, because although Governor Evers has been doing a lot in trying to push the climate activism agenda at the executive level, he really needs the help of a strong, progressive legislature in order to get a lot of his projects done that he wanted to get through and promoted in that task force.
I'm curious how both of you have reacted over the last probably even 10 years when you get a politician standing on the floor of the House holding a snowball saying, here's my proof that climate change doesn't exist and nothing is warming. I mean, your head must just go...
Yeah, at some point, you know, we have to choose our battles. You know, there is the subsegment of the population that is just determined to refuse to acknowledge that climate change is real and that it's happening. And, you know, at the end of the day, if they still believe that in 2022, then Chris and I are not going to be the ones to change their minds. It's the people who are saying, okay, I see climate change is happening, but it's not my problem. They are the ones we are trying to reach, showing that their vote, their actions make a difference. You know, certainly we want people to, you know, look at their own lifestyle and see what they can do to make their own lifestyle a little bit greener. But at the end of the day, what we really need is systems change. And that needs to come from industry, that needs to come from the financial system, and it needs to come from local, state, and federal government. So, like, you know, I would like to have a carbon neutral house, but I cannot build the solar panels myself. I cannot build my own, you know, electric car. I can't build my own electric vehicle charging station. I need those tools to allow me to make these better choices. And for that, we need the climate champions in every position of power we could get them in.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll keep both of you through the break. And when we come back, I actually want to talk a little bit more about the Inflation Reduction Act and what that means for Wisconsin. Our guests are Dr. Chris Uttenberger and Emily Park. And this is As Goes Wisconsin.
Warning gong, ding dong. How did it go so wrong? Rise up nationwide. Stop the rot. Turn the tide.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guests this half hour are from 350 Wisconsin Action and 350 Wisconsin, Dr. Chris Uttenberger and Emily Park. Chris, Doctor, am I saying your name right? Is it Uttenberger?
Uttenberger, yeah.
Uttenberger, cool. I got it. Pretty phonetic.
Yeah.
Before the break, I kind of teed this up because despite being named the Inflation Reduction Act, a large part of the bill that was signed into law through Congress and President Biden signed it actually has a lot to do with climate change. And so what are some of the different aspects of that bill that will impact, I guess, in general, climate change, but more specifically, stuff that we can be doing and investments in Wisconsin?
The most important part, I think, from a climate aspect of the Inflation Reduction Act is the fact that there is nearly $400 billion for incentivizing clean energy and climate action. So that's a huge pot of money that can be going towards reducing energy costs for everyday Americans. And so for Wisconsin specifically, we need to make sure that we are in a place where we can get our fair share of that $400 billion. So as the country moves forward with solar energy, you know, someone's going to have to build those solar panels. Someone's going to have to, you know, help reform the electrical grid. So there's a lot of jobs that can be brought to the state of Wisconsin, and just a lot of opportunities to make green energy affordable for everybody.
Well, that's great to hear. Because I mean, I think there's so much that sometimes gets lost in like the big plan, and then understanding like solar panels versus electric vehicles versus the investments and what's going to be available for consumers. And so I think sometimes bringing it home, like you said, when you're talking to constituents, of knowing what's going to actually be available versus, you know, big flagships type bills that feel very far away from your day-to-day life.
I'm curious, too, while we have both of you here, if you can clarify some claims that have been made about certain more green energy technologies. Like, do windmills cause cancer?
No.
That sounds pretty, that sounds pretty definitive.
Yeah, it's pretty definitive. They do not cause cancer. And I think myself, when I see them as a symbol of hope. I think they're graceful looking, and I think they look nice in the Wisconsin landscape, you know, up on the hills in the Driftless region. I like them. I'm a fan.
I would say the same thing. I see them less in Wisconsin because of where I live in Wisconsin, but certainly when I was living in California, whenever I would drive by big fields of them, I think they look
cool. They're all over parts of Europe.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You know, all over the place, and no one there has been complaining about increased rates of cancer, so I was just kind of curious about that. The other question I have for either one of you or both of you: if I have solar panels in my house and after the sun goes down and I completely locked out in the dark until the sun rises the next day?
No. Luckily for you, your solar panels are connected to batteries. So the solar panel is charging the battery, which then powers your house. So, yeah, that is a common question we hear, and it is patently false.
Yeah, it gets spread around quite a bit by some of our politicians, and I just am always amazed that no one ever stands up and says, I got a question for you, just a little follow-up on the whole sun goes down, we're plunged into darkness argument.
Well, that's also another, because I think a lot of times when we think about electric vehicles and what the infrastructure is going to be needed once we all are driving electric vehicles, which I think is not a crazy thing to think that it will be possible in decades, within the next century, I think, as long as we're still here. But as far as what are some of the misconceptions or myths about electric vehicles, as far as people's objections to getting them that you guys want to dispel?
I guess I would first start by acknowledging that, you know, there is a lot of room for improvement in electric vehicle battery technology to make the batteries, you know, so the car has a longer span before you have to recharge it. So I acknowledge that there are still improvements that can be made, but that's why we need the investment into this kind of research. But a lot of people say, okay, well, you plug your car in, but where's that energy coming from? It's coming from the coal plant. But that's also why we're trying to get, like as you said, solar panels on people's homes, more wind energy, so that eventually when you plug it into the electrical grid, it is, in fact, coming from a renewable energy source.
So then one of my last questions, because breaking news yesterday, this has nothing to do with the work that you guys immediately do, but it's kind of tangentially related. But billionaire no more, Patagonia founder gives away the company in the name of climate change. Is this good? Do we need to read between the lines? Because I feel like this was a very celebrated thing yesterday. But I don't know more of the details. But when you guys hear, as climate change activists, when you hear kind of a headline like that, thumbs up?
I'm so glad you brought it up, because I was thinking of it yesterday. I saw it and I thought, man, I got to bring this up, because this is the exact thing that, you know, it just brings headlines out. And whether or not it's downstream, it'll just flood money into, you know, initiatives that need it. But at the very least, it brought a headline to this one person has given up $3 billion for the climate change, that for the climate activism movement that he thinks is necessary. And at the very least, we got that headline, and more people thought about, what can I do? I don't have $3 billion. I don't think any of us have $3 billion. If you do, I could use approximately $1 billion. but we can do little things ourselves, not necessarily give out that much money, but there's little sacrifices that we can make that will never match that I think that we should all look inside ourselves and say, what can I do for this movement?
And their point of, you know, the earth is our stakeholder, that is true for all of us. you know, we, no matter what you believe about the climate crisis, the fact is we all depend on the planet for life. I don't think that should be a controversial or political statement, but unfortunately it is. But it's the reality. And, you know, it's really great to see a company quite literally putting its money where its mouth is. And, you know, in the past, Patagonia has been an extremely generous supporter of environmental and climate causes. So even before this, they have very, very generously supported a number of climate-related causes. And so it's just really exciting to see that they're planning to continue that going forward.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Chris Uttenberger and Emily Park from 350 Wisconsin. We will link all of the information for the organization on our blog for today's episode. Thank you for joining us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.